Always get news anytime on our website at butlerradio.com and on Alexa powered devices. You download the Butler Radio News skill and say, Alexa, what's in the news? All right, so if I'm giving you the weather, you know what I'm about to say. We've told you yesterday all day long that Dave is returning today and he is going to be up next. Dave returns to It's Your Turn. Thanks so much for joining us and have a good day.
And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. My name is Dave Mullarkey, and it's nice to be back with you after being off for a while on medical leave. In fact, it's great to be back with you. Thanks to all the people here on staff who covered for me while I was gone. I know there were several people that teamed up to do that, and I thank you very much. Open talk to begin the program today, 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. We have guests later. We're going to be talking about fast food and processed food and how a medical doctor thinks it's killing us. He is Dr. Joel Furman, MD, and we'll talk with him about fast food and processed food. And also today, a visit to Jerusalem in Israel with Elon Greenfield. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program. First of all, though, it's open talk, 283-2525. So without any further ado, let's get to the telephones here and get to the people. Hi, caller. This is Dave Mullarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, Dave, a few weeks ago you had a thing on about mom-and-pop grocery stores in Butler. Do you remember that?
I do indeed, yes. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on the one that we used to have in Eau Claire, J.M. Beatty. It was more like a mini Walmart.
Hello?
Are you? Little larger stores like that.
Okay, okay. You said that was in Eau Claire?
Yes, yeah, Eau Claire, PA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know where it is. For some reason, and
it burnt down here a while back.
Yeah, I thought that was. I thought that was.
It used to be the. That was the center of town, and it's a really great store when they had it running. You know, it was back in the when I grew up in the 50s and 60s. It was like a mini Walmart almost. You'd go in there, buy paint, screws, food, anything. And I was wondering if anyone had written any stories about those kind of stores.
Well, a couple of notes, not that I know of, first of all. And I was under the impression that was Thompson's Market. Am I wrong
on
Thompson's
that? Thompson's took it over after Beatty's closed it down.
Oh, I
or,
never...
you know, sold out.
I did not realize that it was a Beatty operation to begin with. No, I didn't know that. No. J.M. Beatty also had a car dealership in Eau Claire.
Yeah, they had a car dealership. They had a furniture store that's now out at the old school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right along 38 there, the old Washington School and the Montauk School.
It's out at the old Washington Elementary School now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big operation. It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I live in Greensburg here, and I buy furniture up there. They delivered down here, but it was a nice store, and it was. They really give back to the community, the Beatty family, when I lived up there. They were extremely nice people.
Devastating fire just took the whole thing.
And I think that was part of why the community was so easy to grow up in up there. So
mm-hmm.
That's the only comment I wanted to make. I wondered if anybody had written any books about, you know, stores, other stores in Butler County. The lady had written all about the little mom and pop stores in Butler County, but Butler, PA. But I wondered if there was anything.
Yeah, her book was limited to the city of Butler because that was all she was writing about. Otherwise, it would have just been too big, you know.
Okay, hey, and I'm glad you're feeling better, Dave.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a lot. Yeah, so long.
Mm-hmm. Bye bye now.
283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. As we have open talk on the first portion of the program today. 283-2525. And boy, thanks for all of the. Got back to work today and I had get well cards from folks. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. I haven't got them all opened yet. So I much appreciate that. And what else did we have? Had an email from a listener in, I tell you, when we stream, which is still relatively new in the radio business, and we stream this program all over the country. Had an email today from a woman in Somerville, South Carolina. Says, welcome back, Dave. We missed you. I listen every day from South Carolina. Glad you're back. Debbie, thanks very much. And thanks to everybody. Okay, back to the phones we go. It's open talk, 283-2525, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave. I haven't spoken to you for a long time, but I when you weren't on the radio for a while, I was a little concerned. I didn't know you were ill. So you're feeling better?
Yes, feeling much better now. Mm-hmm.
How's your golf game been, Dave? I haven't talked to you for a long time.
Well, my golf game has been just good enough to slightly challenge my brother, who he treats me, I don't know, he treats me like, you know, he toys with me for a while and then he beats me.
Well, can you still beat Dennis Casey is my question.
Oh, wow. Dennis Casey and I, we're pretty much equal. Yeah.
Are you? Okay. Do you have any idea who this is?
Not off the top of my head, no. Wait a minute.
Well, you know,
wait a minute. Is it Jim?
It is.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Haven't spoken with you in ages.
I know, buddy. I've started to listen to your radio show, and I kind of reconnected with Dennis here recently when he moved back, and he and I were talking about some of the good times at the theater and a lot of other, you know, some rides down to the ball game, if you remember those days. And,
do I ever?
And, but anyway, buddy, I just wanted to call and say hello, and I'm glad to hear you're doing well, and maybe sometime this summer we can get together and play a little golf.
I would love it, Jim. Hey, nice to talk to you. Good to hear your voice,
right,
my friend.
All right, good talking to you, David.
Thanks so much. 283-2525 is our number. It is open talk here on the It's Your Turn program today. 283-2525. And I want to tell you, it was great to be back on the early morning show today. Great to be back on It's Your Turn here today. Tracy Morgan, Tyler Friel, I think, filled in for the most part here on the afternoon show on It's Your Turn. So we thank them a great deal as well. What's going on in the world these days? Well, we had the State of the Union address last night. I did not watch. That has nothing to do with politics or a political party or anything like that, actually. I stopped watching the State of the Union address, 20 years ago, maybe. Maybe more. It has morphed to become, it's almost a circus. I'm sure that that's not what the Founding Fathers intended it to be. George Washington, of course, delivered the first State of the Union address. It was not a speech. He did not go to Congress and he sent them a letter. When it started to be a speech, I do not know. But over the last couple of decades, it's just, you know, it's like a circus. The president, I don't care whether it's Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. So the president says something, everybody stands up and cheers, they applaud, they sit down, some people boo, and he says something else, and it just takes forever. Just give the speech. Can't these people sit in their seats for 45 minutes and listen to a speech? It just drives me nuts. So, I mean, I checked out the highlights today. I read about it, watched some video, but I just don't watch the speech itself anymore because all it does is make my blood boil. 283-2525. Just childish, I think. 283-2525. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Just wanted to call and say happy to have you back.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you. Thank you very, 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 very much.
Yeah. The other ones did a nice job, but there's nobody like Dave.
Oh, listen to this. Wow. Wow.
I just love how you give the weather forecast and, you know, tell with how the roads are out there and everything, and I really go by what you say. I've also had friends and relatives know that I listen to you and WISR, and they're asking, where's Dave at? Where's Dave at? And I'm like, well, I think he's off on vacation, and he got sick, and he's just trying to get better. He'll be back.
Well, that was a pretty good summary of it, as a matter of fact. Well, nice
but so
to hear
happy
from you.
To have you back, Dave.
Oh, goodness, that's very kind of you. I thank you very much for those
You're
kind
very
thoughts.
Welcome.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk. 283-2525 here on the It's Your Turn program today. It's the Wednesday edition. This is a significant day. We had the super blue, red, orange, purple moon today, which nobody saw because of the cloud cover. It's over the hump day, Wednesday. And for goodness sakes, it's the last day in January. And is there anybody unhappy about that? I don't think so. 283-2525, open talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. And I'm one of the people who welcomes you back with open arms and a hug.
Wow. Open arms and a hug. Wow.
Yeah. I put my arms right around you and give you a big hug because I really missed you.
The
folks did a great job, but there's just something because I've listened to you for so long. I just expect to hear you kind of thing. I miss you when you just take a vacation. So I wanted to tell you that I agree with you about the State of the Union speech.
And I tell you, I'm a person...
I didn't listen. I was fed up. It's just like the Super Bowl, you know. They start talking about it a week ahead of time. And what you said is true. I am so tired of people standing up, sitting down, clapping, not clapping. It is like a show instead of what I think it was intended to inform us.
Oh, there's no question about it. I love your comparison to Super Bowl week. I hadn't thought about that. But...
I'm fed up with that, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't pay any attention to it anymore. I just can't. 2 weeks of that is enough to make anybody nauseous, I think.
Well, like I said to my son, they've taken everything to the extreme. You know, everything has to be a big to-do. And they, to me, they just kind of wear it out and take away from the way you used to enjoy sports or even listening to somebody, you know, give you a summary of how things are going in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's just become some kind of, I think circus is a really good analogy.
Or even a junior high basketball game where everybody stands up and then they sit down, then they applaud, then they stand up, then they sit down. Just sit there and listen to the speech, for goodness sakes. Let the guy finish.
And then when afterwards, you know, I listen to everybody deciding whether it was a good speech or a bad speech, and I'm thinking, oh, please, let's just get over it and go on with the real business of the country.
I agree with you 100%. 100%.
Okay, but I just wanted to know that somebody else out there agrees with me that, hey, it's not worth turning on and listening to. It will be on the news in little bits, you know, they'll show parts of it for the next couple of weeks, and everybody will give their review of it. And it's like, there are times when I want to stop listening to news because it's become such a, I can't even explain it anymore.
You know, you are not alone. I've talked to a lot of people who have just kind of, they've just kind of tuned out. you know?
Well, because it's, like I said, another, I live alone now, I'm a widow, and my son comes up to check on me, so he's the one that bears the brunt of my my comments of one thing, breaking news. It's not really breaking news anymore. It's because they've trivialized it.
That's
everything
very,
is breaking news.
Very overused so, term, that's for sure.
Absolutely, but I am so happy to hear your voice again and so glad you're feeling better.
Thank you.
Welcome back, as I said.
Thank you for your kind thoughts. Thank you. So long now. 283-2525 is our number. It is Open Talk here on the It's Your Turn program today. Dave Malarkey back with you after an absence, and it's good to be back. Good to be sitting in this chair again, and good to be talking to you. Open Talk, 283-2525. Let's take another caller. Hi there. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, Dave. Hi. I'm just calling to say it's nice to have you back.
Oh, how kind of you. Thank you
very
much.
And I hope everything goes well for you. That's all.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate your thoughts.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thanks. 283-2525. Our number, 283-2525. Speaking of the Super Bowl and Super Bowl silliness, I don't. Are you going to watch this year? I'm not sure I am. I'm not sure that I am. First of all, it's now a night game. You know, what a previous caller, two or three callers ago, the woman was talking about comparing the State of the Union to the Super Bowl. When the Super Bowl started out, it was an afternoon game. It was a 1 o'clock kickoff, just like most National Football League games are. And there was no big hoopla. I think the first game, Pat Parker, our engineer on the other side of the glass, it's you're too young for that, but it was, I think it was in the Los Angeles Coliseum. It was always in a warm place because they didn't have domed football stadiums back there. It was Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Does that sound right? I don't know. It was a big game. Green Bay won the first two, so it was Green Bay and somebody. And it was a good game. It was a championship, but it wasn't this super two-week-long circus that it has now become, with a halftime show that lasts 2.5 hours. My morning colleague Kate today said that it's going to be Justin Timberlake this Sunday. Justin Timberlake, I'm sure he's a fine young man. He's not one of my favorites, but what do you need a concert in the middle of the football game for? It's a football game. Play the championship, right? Did they stop the World Series, you know, in the fifth inning and have a concert? No. They stopped the Stanley Cup playoffs after the second period and, you know, have a concert? No. Keep playing. Send the teams into the locker room, have an orange, come back out. Still have an orange at halftime? That's what we did in high school basketball. Do you play high school basketball, Pat? High school basketball? No. Just go into the locker room. They had oranges in there. They threw everybody an orange. You sat down on the bench, you listened to the coach, ate an orange. Back out and played the second half. 283-2525. We need to take a break. It's Open Talk. We shall return with more in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the program today, the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, here in Butler. Wow, they're volunteers. They just do so much. So much. You know, they have a thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. And they're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. If you have items, if you're cleaning out the closet or the spare room or the, you know, the attic, and you've got stuff that you don't need anymore or don't want anymore, maybe it's clothes that don't fit anymore, consider donating these items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. First of all, if you're going to throw them away, why put them in a landfill? They can sell these items. Somebody will be able to use them. And all of the proceeds from the operation of the thrift store, every penny, stays here in Butler County to help those who are less fortunate. And it helps fund their food bank, too, and their client aid program. So consider it. Donating items is easy. And the thrift store is in the Greater Butler Mart. Plenty of free parking, literally, right outside the door. And the drop-off bins are right inside the door. I mean, bada-bing, 15 seconds and, you know, you're done. They like to say we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. It's a great thought. And they're great people. And they do great things for the less fortunate. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Greater Butler Mart for the thrift store. And the food bank, by the way, is on Elm Street. In the Lower Institute Hill in the city of Butler. We will be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. It's the It's Your Turn program for a Wednesday, the last day of January. Nice to have you with us here on the program today. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about fast food, the processed food, and how a medical doctor, Dr. Joel Furman, thinks it's killing us. So we'll talk with him about what's bad about that. And then later on, a pictorial visit to Jerusalem. Jerusalem in Israel, a holy city to three major religions. The Jewish religion, of course, Christian religion with the holy sites in Jerusalem and nearby Bethlehem, and it's also a holy city for Islam. So we'll talk about that with Elon Greenfield a little bit later on the program today. Open talk right now. 283-2525. Baby boomers only. Simply because if you're not a baby boomer or older, you won't remember the beginning of the United States space program. Yeah. And you have to go back to my dates on this, probably going to be a little bit foggy. The then Soviet Union launched the first successful satellite to orbit the Earth, Sputnik, I think it was called. But the first successful satellite launched by the U.S. was Explorer 1. Explorer 1. And it was launched on January 31st, 1958. So it's an anniversary here today. What is that, 60 years? 58? 60 years. And NASA didn't want to tell anybody about it until they were sure that it went into orbit. You know, that it wasn't going to be a flop. Because the Russians, the Soviets were ahead of us at that time. It was successful, and thus began the age of space exploration for the U.S. 60 years ago today. How about that? Okay, back to the phones we go. Open talk at 283-2525. Caller, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Welcome back. I can actually say I miss hearing your voice every day.
Wow. Thanks very much. I appreciate you. Appreciate your kind thoughts.
Well, we get used to the other ones, but I tried to listen several days to see if they were having open talk because I had a question I wanted to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in last week's paper, a part owner of the Majestic Bar passed away, and I'd asked a friend of mine where that bar was, and he never even heard of it. And I know it was in Butler because I've heard you people talk about them. So that was my question, and I wanted to let you know they have that book you talked about the neighborhood stores in the city. I've tried to get twice now, and they've sold out both times, I think like 25, 50 copies already. So the book's doing really well.
Yes, it's been a very successful book for Linda Randig, and I wouldn't be surprised if they have another printing. But so let me think for a second here. The Majestic Bar. Well, let me tell you the thoughts that come to mind. First of all, I can't think of one in Butler. There was obviously a Majestic Theater, which is that building is still there. It's not a theater anymore. It's down. Right across from the new tier parking garage there, you know, right on the corner.
Okay.
That was a theater, an opera house. But Majestic Bar, wow.
Majestic Theater.
I don't know. Well, we'll throw the question out to the listeners. Maybe somebody has heard about it, you know.
I don't hear anything. The next time you have open subject, I'll try to give a call in and see if you found out what it was.
Okay, my friend. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, and good to have you back. Bye-bye. Oh,
thanks for that. Anybody remember a Majestic Bar? A bar that was called the Majestic? I do not. But, I mean, I didn't grow up and spend my formative years in Butler, although all of my adult years I've been here. I don't know. With the pubs and bars and taverns, names change a lot. You know, sometimes an establishment will be in the same location but have a different name. Sometimes three or four different names, you know, as owners change and so on. Majestic Bar, no. There was, I think it was a Majestic Bar in... where's Teal College located? Northern Mercer County. What's the name of that town? Green, not Green. I think there was one up there that I visited once with some college pals, but I don't know of any other. Well, anybody know? 283-2525, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I believe the Majestic Bar used to set on Cunningham Street across from that post office right at the corner down from the bus station there.
Well, that would have been... That's Jefferson Street right across from the old post office, right?
And the other town you were talking about is Greenville, and there's a Majestic Bar there also.
Greenville. I knew it was Green something, yes. It's the Majestic Bar, and the local patrons refer to it as the Magi.
Yes, yes.
Don't ask me how I know that.
All righty. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks much, my friend. Wait a minute. Are you still there?
Yes.
Hello? I'm sorry. Maybe I was confused on that. The old post office is at the corner of Washington and Jefferson Streets. Cunningham is one block over.
The Majestic used to set on, like you go to the bus station and go straight down to the corner there.
Uh-huh.
It was on the same side as the bus station, across from that parking lot.
Are you talking about the old bus station or the one that we have now, the bus terminal now?
The bus terminal's still there now. Yeah, it's the one we have now.
Okay, because the old one was just down from Troutman. Do you remember that one?
I don't recall that one, but I'm pretty sure that's where the Majestic sat.
Okay, well, thanks for the info, my friend. I appreciate.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, good to talk with you. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
283-2525. So he says there was a Majestic Bar. That would have been East Cunningham Street, 100 block of East Cunningham. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hi.
that's the second answer I've got in the same place. So that must have been it. That's where, sorry for calling back the second time, but that will be where the Butler Medical Associates, Dr. Noah Thombe, is.
Well, that's the...
There's a Rite Aid. You go down, okay, you're at Rite Aid, and you go down into the parking garage, and they have a big parking lot there. Right across the street is Noah Thombe Associates. Mm-hmm. And then when you go around the side of the building, there's a like a thing that goes down, like it would be a, I don't know, back entrance to the bar. So that would make sense where it was at. But
well, that was also, that is the building that was called the Majestic Theater, to the best of my recollection. I mean, long before my time, but
it's
the same
building.
Yeah,
it was before my time, too, so I don't. All right, well, we'll hear some other answers, I'm sure, down the road. Thank you. You have a good day.
And you. 283-2525, open talk on the program today, 283-2525. A Majestic Bar. You know, when Linda Randig was here with us on the program late last year, talking about her book on mom-and-pop grocery stores that are no longer there, I was kidding with her because the book proved to be extremely popular. And I said, so what's next, Linda? You gonna do a book on all the old bars in Butler? And she said, no, I'm not going to. Although there has been more than one person who suggested that might be an interesting topic as well. I was just astonished with her research on the old mom-and-pop store. I mean, I knew we had a lot, and most towns had some anyway. But what, she had 400 and some that she came up with. Yes, 400 and some that she came up with her book. Amazing research. I mean, I would have guessed, I don't know, 50, 75. I would certainly not have guessed 400. It's open talk. Here's the phone number, 283-2525, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yes, Dave. The Majestic Bar was 127 East Cunningham Street, right next to the Majestic Theater, yes.
Also, it was right next to the Majestic.
Yeah, there's a medical art building, then there's a little room back in there. They had, it was a very small place, but that was called the Majestic Bar, yes.
Was it, did you enter it from Cunningham
Street? Oh, yeah, Cunningham Street, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So
I was
it,
a mailman there, so I know.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I didn't want to get into your personal bar visits, but...
Well, I've been in most everyone in the city of Butler. But I'm no habitual drunkard or anything, but I enjoy a glass of beer now and then.
Was this, would you, because the name is kind of interesting, would you call this, would you categorize this, kind of a upper class pub? Or
I
was
would
it just
say
a,
yes. I would have to say
oh,
yes.
Oh, so it wasn't just like a neighborhood
dive.
I
don't think it was just a run of the mind bar. It was just... Mm-hmm. It was a nice place to go into to have a drink, yeah, a shot or a beer, whatever you wanted, yes.
Well, we'd never get the exact address unless we were talking to a mailman. Thanks.
Well, I know that's where it was situated, the Majestic Bar, yes.
I appreciate you taking the time to
well,
call
thanks.
Us, my friend.
It's glad to have you back, dude, Dave.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye.
283-2525. There you go, caller. 127 East Cunningham, beside... what we know is the Majestic Building. Hi there, caller. Hello, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, Cheryl Hillier, Joe Lowman's sister. How are you, Dave? Glad to have you back. And I'm just home from nursing today. But my friend, I'm not that old, but my friend Bob McLaughlin from Cottage Hill Avenue worked there, and she was a dear friend. And she is 100% right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you for being back. I'm on my way to nursing. Thank you, Tom. Glad to have you back on the air. I don't get to hear you much because I do private duty nursing.
Uh-huh.
Well, but you know my brother Dale Lumley very well. I'm Cheryl. I used to talk to you up at the Cozy Corner when Bonnie Randolph had it.
Absolutely. Boy, that goes back a few years, doesn't it?
Oh, doesn't it ever, Dave? For 51, I really feel old. But I just wanted to tell her thank you, and I know my friend
Paul McLaughlin had walked there from Christ Hill Avenue. Thank you, and glad to have you back. And I got a very ill patient I got to go take care of. Thank you, Dave, for being back.
Sure, thanks.
And thank that lady. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. Thanks for the call, taking the time to call. Yes, the old cozy corner. Cozy corner. That was in Linda's book, because that was one of the old mom-and-pop neighborhood stores, neighborhood grocery stores, up in the Institute Hill area. In fact, it was right across the street from the Institute Hill Presbyterian Church. Cozy corner. Yes, Bonnie Randolph had it. And by the way, caller, if you're still listening, nurse, believe it or not, I just bumped into Bonnie. Yeah, not too long ago, a couple of days ago. I was walking down the aisle of the grocery store and almost rammed my cart into her. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Open talk here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. For a Wednesday, January 31st. Is there anybody who is unhappy about January being over? Certainly not me. I've had my difficulties in January, but the weather, just brutal. And, you know, you have to wonder about how things have changed in terms of our seasons. Because we really didn't have much of anything up until just before Christmas. That was the real first cold. I mean, we had a couple of cold days, but the first real cold snap came just before Christmas. And then just after Christmas for the past month, man, it's been brutal. Brutal. We had 2 weeks there where we never got above freezing. It was from Christmas Eve till, I don't remember the date, 18th of January or something like that. Never above freezing, day or night. Brutal. Well, it'll be February tomorrow. There's still lots of winter left. But I don't know about you, I start dreaming when you get to February. You know, I'm starting to think, well, won't be too long now. I've made it to February. Won't be too long before spring comes along. So I'm always happy to see January go, especially this year, because it's been so bitterly cold. And we're still experiencing the up and the down. You know, we had a very wintry day yesterday, obviously, with the snow and the school delays and the cold and the wind, biting wind. Now today, we're expected to get up to near 40. I'm not sure we're going to get there. Last I looked, it was only about 30. Is that still what we have, Pat Parker? Yeah, so, well, not too bad anyway. Better than yesterday, that's for sure. And if the forecasters are correct, it may actually stay above freezing tonight. There's precip on the way, but predicted low is 34, so. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Coming up shortly now, we'll be talking about fast food and processed food, and how a medical doctor thinks it's killing us. And we'll also be taking a photographic visit to Jerusalem later on the program today. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. We will be back right after these words.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Nice to have you with us. Phone number is 283-2525. We have a couple minutes left here for open talk on the program. 283-2525. Current temperature, I'm just updating the weather here for you. Yeah, 32 degrees. I don't know whether we're going to get to 40 or not. I mean, the daylight hours are beginning to stretch out, but you know, once you get to 3 o'clock, most days temperatures are going to start going down. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Thanks for waiting a bit. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi.
Hi.
Glad to hear you're back.
Oh, thanks very much for your thoughts.
I just wanted to comment on two things we did. I hear my radio. Is it bothering you?
No, I think we're okay.
Okay. First of all, Butler Little Theater, people that miss those shows miss something wonderful. Other People's Money was fantastic. We went to that last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the talk in Pauly Shaw in Portersville about the lecture on Moraine.
Yes, yes.
That was fabulous. She did a wonderful,
now, since
wonderful
I
presentation, and that church was packed.
Now, when was that exactly?
That was Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4.
Okay.
And it was a beautiful afternoon to drive over there, too.
Well, Pauly,
not that it's all that far, but...
Pauly was a guest. We had her as a guest on the program last year. I don't know whether you heard the interview we did with her.
I did, and I had bought the book this past spring when I was down there, or summer.
Mm-hmm.
One of my kids gave me a gift certificate to that bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And I met her down there. But a little side note, when I was in junior high, I was interviewed on WISR by Margo Pitts as a girl. It was Girl Scout week, and I was a Girl Scout.
Well, the late Margo Pitts, of course, Pauly Shaw's mother.
Mother, yes.
Yeah. And one of my mentors, by the way, when I was...
Margo.
Yeah, back when I was a cub reporter, she kind of took me under her wing and was my mentor for a while.
But I just wanted to mention some of these programs. Well, Pauly's was free, but I know I hear you talk about Little Theater a lot. And we moved into Butler about 12 years ago, and we've missed very few Little Theater shows.
Well, it's pretty good stuff.
There's some talent.
Yeah, when you figure it's all local, it's all volunteer,
nobody gets
paid. They do it for the love of it. And get this, straight through since 1941, every year. Now, when they started out, they didn't do as many shows as they do now. But they never had an interruption, even during World War II.
Wartime. Oh.
Yeah. Now, they had to scramble because they did some shows at Slippery Rock. Well, back then it was Slippery Rock Normal School, I think, back in the early 40s. But they had to do them up there because the only place they could find some men.
Oh, I see.
But they went on uninterrupted, and, of course, after the war, back here in Butler. And that's quite a record to go that many years.
It sure is.
Continuously. Yeah. Nice talking to you today.
Okay. Thanks for the listening.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take a break here, and when we come back, our first guest, Dr. Joel Furman, MD. We're going to be talking about fast food, processed food, and why he thinks it's horrible for us, why he thinks it's killing us, as a matter of fact. Listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR, Dr. Joel Furman coming up next.
It's that time of year. Sniffles, coughing, chills, and everything else that comes with cold and flu season. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, they want to get you feeling better as soon as possible. Customer service is their number one priority, so you will have your prescription in a matter of minutes and be on your way to feeling better fast. Stop by your locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy at 937 East Jefferson Street. Call 285-3693 or check them out on Facebook. And don't forget, Institute Hill Pharmacy has great 99-cent greeting cards, retailer gift cards, and specialty gifts for all occasions. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Going to be talking about fast food, folks, and why it is not good for you. And we welcome Dr. Joel Furman, M.D., to speak with us here on the It's Your Turn program today. If you're just joining us, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. Dr. Furman joins us by telephone today. We want to talk about his latest book. The title is Fast Food Genocide: How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Dr. Furman, we've talked in the past. It was several years ago, but it's nice to have you back with us, sir.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me back.
So, boy, that's a pretty strong title there, Dr. Furman. Fast Food Genocide. That's not an exaggeration?
You know, I mean, that's the whole point here, is that people have no idea what's going on. I mean, I think a lot of people recognize that junk food, candy, processed foods, and fast foods create obesity, diabetes, heart attacks, and cancer. I think they have an idea of that. But I think the concept of how fast food destructive to the brain, causing mental illness and strokes before the age of 45, putting people in nursing homes, and of course, the link between candy and fast food and mental illness and crime and drug use, we don't really see how destructive it is to whole parts of our society, and especially vulnerable areas of our society, and people living in urban, what they call food deserts, who don't have access to produce and are living on mostly fast food. But fast food has now become, and we're talking here about, you know, candy and chips and cookies and donuts and crackers and rice cakes and breakfast bars and all kinds of junk food people eat besides just what they buy in fast food restaurants. We're talking about this is now the major source of calories in America, and we're seeing a dramatic increase not just in the waistline, but also in mental illness and drug use. And now the majority of people incarcerated in federal prisons today are there because nonviolent rated drug use offenses. And the link between candy and fast food and crime and drug use is stronger than poverty and drug use, is stronger than lack of parents or bad parenting and drug use, is stronger than almost any other parameter we can look at. I'm saying here that fast food impairs thinking skills and it impairs intelligence, and it makes you a food addict, unable to break out of the hunger for calories and for junk food, and it derails people's opportunity to realize the American dream. So this is something that's destructive to our society, and we can talk more about how it affects our genes and destroys future generations' health when we eat fast food ourselves, but the point is that the science that's been coming out on the subject in the last decade, that people have to know this information, and we have to change things in America.
Well, let's define terms before we get too deep into some of the things that you've just mentioned here. The title of your book is Fast Food Genocide. What exactly do we mean by fast food? Is that strictly burgers and fries? I mean, couldn't a so-called fast food establishment serve something that was healthy just as quickly?
Exactly. And so, yes, right, the definition of fast food, of course, in this context means things that can be purchased fast, eaten fast without preparation, absorbed into the bloodstream very rapidly because of how fast the calories are absorbed into the bloodstream. That huge load coming in at one time affects the brain and causes addiction. And, of course, synthetic ingredients, you know, highly flavored. We're talking about foods that are processed foods. We're considering fast foods, junk food, candy, things in bags like chips and donuts and cookies. Mm-hmm. But also, when we eat fried foods like fried chicken and french fries, things that are cooked in oil in a fast food establishment, the cooking of the oil and reheating of that oil causes carcinogenic changes, rancid compounds to be formed, and this food now becomes carcinogenic and mutagenic, means it destroys, it can cause birth defects in our children when we eat it, and the link between just even moderate use of fried foods like that can cause cancer. Like we're talking here, the studies show that one serving of french fries per week of commercial fast food french fries increases risk of breast cancer by 26%. So, yes, we're talking about things that are barbecued and fried on the grill, and so we're talking about processed meats and fast food meats. We're talking about, so in other words, it's the food preparation methods, it's the injection of sugar and salt in the food, it's the use of synthetic ingredients, it's the rapid concentrations entering the bloodstream, it's the lack of phytochemicals, antioxidants, and fibers that are so that the brain needs a continual supply of to achieve normalcy. So it's so many factors coming together. And yes, so a fast food restaurant can serve a healthy bean chili and it's a great tomato sauce. So fast food restaurants can change and serve foods that are healthier too. So this is not an indictment against everything that a fast food restaurant serves. It's against the concept of fast food and processed foods now becoming the majority of the calories Americans are eating and the outcomes and the effect on society that's occurring as a result of that.
So that's rather a sobering statistic there, that just how much fast food Americans are eating these days. Is this a relatively recent development, within the past decade or so?
I don't know about it. I don't really show the answer to that question. I think that, you know, since World War II, when we've started inventing Spam and Twinkies and Tang and instant coffee, we see the government and scientists invented food for the battlefield so that it wouldn't have to be refrigerated and keep fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And people ate, you know, these concentrated foods. And then, obviously, when people were driven out of the South with the white supremacy movement and a lot of violence in the South in the early 1900s, and pellagra was a big cause of violence in the South because it causes homicidal and suicidal behavior because of niacin deficiency in the corn-based diet there. After we didn't really discover the cause of that until the 1920s. So there's a lot of factors involved in American history with the growth of the fast food movement and the movement of black Americans into inner cities in the North with lack of food availability and convenience food and fast food became the primary source of calories, which then had an effect to keep these people somewhat oppressed. And their opportunities for advancement were hindered, not just because of social negativity and the lack of an economic opportunity, but also what I'm saying here, the lack of food opportunity and food distribution was and of course, so we made these foods, these new convenience foods and frankenfoods, we made them inexpensive and ubiquitously available, and we made produce more expensive. And some laws in this country supported those foods being cheap and supported produce being more expensive. And then we have this cycle today now where fast food have permeated much of all of society. And sure, it's been worse in the last 20 years, but this process of Americans becoming more obese and Americans becoming more diabetic and diabetes incidence being linked to crime incidence of sugar causing sugar consumption and sugar availability and sweeteners and fast foods accelerating drug use and crime, that's been really, worsened since the 1960s and 70s to the point where now it's really become epidemic.
You mentioned a couple of moments ago processed meats. I know the World Health Organization has declared processed meats a Class 1 carcinogen. Can you expand on that a little bit for our listeners? Processed meats, what exactly does that mean? What's a processed meat?
Well, I think the processed meats they're referring to are things like bologna, salami, bacon, you know, things that come, big meats that are like processed with nitrates. But, you know, when you barbecue meat or when you grill meat, it's the hot, or flame broil, whatever you do there, whatever they do in the fast food restaurants, it does cause carcinogenic changes that are accelerated through the production of heterocyclic amines and N-nitrosamine compounds. So we're talking about, it's not the same thing as making a soup and putting some little pieces of shrimp or turkey in the soup that's cooked with a water base. So it's not like making a stew or something with some animal products in it or something. It's not the same thing as these high-temperature, fast-cooking methods which darken or crisp the outside of the surface, which increases the carcinogenic potential of these animal products. So, yeah, the World Health Organization is declared meat processed meats, and also fast food and barbecue meats are class 1 carcinogen, the same as asbestos and cigarette smoke.
Mm.
So we're talking here about the synergistic effect of the high glycemic carbohydrates, the sugary foods, the high salt diet, the low fiber diet, the high synthetic ingredients and chemicals in the foods, the fact that the way the food is cooked by deep frying it or grilling it or barbecuing it, all these things come together to damage our body, to increase the risk of cancer, to damage our brain, and also I'm saying something new here that's also showing it damages our genes, so it makes our children and our grandchildren more predisposed to illness when we eat poorly. So we're not just destroying our own life, we're weakening our genes, and we're passing on weaker genes to future generations, causing a more preponderance and a more predisposition to more disease, early-life disease and early-life strokes and early-life and autism and learning disabilities and allergies and other problems are passed on to our offspring. And the issue here is that these urban populations eating processed foods and fast foods suffering with 10 times the risk of heart attack and 7 times the risk of stroke before the age of 45, it's exacerbating racism and bigotry now because people's lack of ability to succeed health-wise or emotion or intellectually or into their careers are being blamed on their skin color and not on their food exposure. You follow me?
Yeah. All right. Listeners, we have to take a quick break. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Dr. Joel Fuhrman here on the program today. And by the way, if you're thinking, have I heard that name before? You probably have. Dr. Fuhrman has been on lots of TV shows, Today's Show, Good Morning America, Dr. Oz. He's had several very successful specials on PBS, and he's also written a number of other books, too. We're talking today about fast food genocide, how processed food is killing us and what we can do about it. It's the latest from Dr. Joel Fuhrman. When we come back in just a moment or so, we'll talk about the second part of that title, What Can We Do About It? You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR, back right after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back, listeners, on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visiting with us by telephone is Dr. Joel Fuhrman, MD, author of his latest book, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. So if we shy away from all of these things that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, well, that's a lot of stuff that we're eating. What do we shift to? What's healthy to eat, Dr. Fuhrman?
Well, you know, I'm a very strong advocate that people have salads, that have people eat raw vegetables, because there's more than 200 studies and a meta-analysis showing the link between raw vegetable consumption and lower rates of cancer and longer lifespan. So one of my mantras to tell people is eat a big salad every day as a main dish at least once a day, and put in lettuce and cruciferous vegetables and peppers and tomatoes and onions. The scallion and onion family, very powerful, it protects against cancer. And then nuts and seeds are tremendously powerful, extending human life, protecting against both heart disease and cancer. And people aren't eating nuts and seeds and beans. We'll have to put beans in the salad, but nuts and seeds to make a salad dressing, like some tomato sauce with some almonds and sunflower seeds, maybe with some fig vinegar or balsamic vinegar in there with a few raisins, you know, mixed into the salad dressing. One of my favorite dressings is blend an orange with some cashews and sesame seeds. They even toast the sesame seeds with some blood orange vinegar or white wine vinegar. It tastes really great, too. But make a healthy salad and so on. So the first thing is the salad, the main dish.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I want people to do is on the weekend make a giant pot of vegetable bean soup. Beans extend lifespan. Your vegetables cooked in the soup. When you water cook food, it prevents these acrylamides and dangerous compounds from being formed. The moisture prevents the drying and the over-baking and grilling foods that make it harmful. So we're talking about a big soup of beans and vegetables in it, maybe kale or mustard greens or turnips, you know, all kinds of carrot juice and vegetable broth base with onions and mushrooms. We're talking about delicious soup. And you make a giant pot and you can take it and have it for dinner or with your lunch with a salad and a piece of fruit. It's so easy. It's not that hard to do this because just think for a second. If you just did a salad and a soup and a piece of fruit for lunch, now, if you made your breakfast something simple like steel, like oats with some flax seeds and cherries or wild blueberries or some almond milk or something, made a healthy breakfast and a healthy lunch, that's three quarters. That's not two thirds. That's three quarters of the issue right there. We solve just from those two things. If people just did those two things, we'd solve half the health problems in America.
Okay.
And you know what I'm saying also is that we can make incredibly delicious desserts that kids love and people love that taste great. You know, without sugar, we can, like for example, I love to eat ice cream, so I make two frozen bananas, a handful of macadamia nuts, and a nice teaspoon of vanilla bean powder blended up in a blender. It's so incredibly delicious. There's not even any dates or any even sugar in there. If I want to put a cocoa powder in, unsweetened cocoa powder, make it chocolatey, I can always put a date in there to sweeten it more. But the point I'm making now is that the effect of taking in sweets from fruit or from a little bit of dried fruit has a complete different biological effect when you take sweets from honey, maple syrup, sugar, artificial sweeteners, agave nectars, and other forces of sugar that rush into the bloodstream much more rapidly. And the fruit makes it absorb into the bloodstream much more slowly, not having the negative effects on the body. So it's a different way of cooking and a different way of preparing food, and it can be made to taste delicious. And I'm trying, and this is just information that all Americans have to know about, and they got to learn about this because it's such a negative effect on our society, what the way people are doing now.
Yeah, we can learn to enjoy eating healthy as much as, in fact, you have a lot of recipe ideas and even some menus in the latter part of your book. And I mean, folks, I just opened it randomly, but listen to some of this. Raspberry dressing, healthy. Super simple hummus, healthy. Look at this, walnut cream vinaigrette. He was talking about dressings a little earlier. Soups, look at this, corn and red pepper soup with sweet potatoes and the kale. So it's simply a matter of learning to enjoy. I mean, it's not a penance, it's not a hair shirt to eat healthy. You can learn to really like it.
You know, and that's right. And most of the people adopting this program who are starting to eat more or really healthier to prevent later life illnesses and protect the brain, they report, we did a study on this, published in this medical journal with more than 750 people, that they liked eating this way. They liked the taste as much or better than their old diet. And they didn't like it better right away. It took a few months for them to change their taste buds and learn the recipes. But once they adopted their taste buds and learned the new desserts and the new soups and all the things they could eat and their taste buds adjusted to it, they liked it just as much. So, you know, because I know some people listening are thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, I know I don't eat healthier. I know I could be healthier. But you know what? I'd rather just die. I'd rather live a shorter life and enjoy my life more and eat whatever I feel like it. And they're thinking that they're going to enjoy their life more. And they'd rather just live a shorter life. But they don't enjoy their life more. They enjoy their life less. And the people who eat healthy have just as much enjoyment with food as they do. But the difference is that the tragedies that ensue, they don't just die younger. Sometimes they suffer for decades in nursing homes or with diabetes or in pain or with suffering and with all kinds of medical tests and medical dependencies and their brain function decreases and their ability to be happy, and it puts a fog over their mental thoughts and keeps them depressed and unable to think clearly. So we're talking here about food doesn't just make you die younger, it also lowers the quality of your life. So what I'm saying is that the effort to make these changes is worth it.
If we make a shift to a nutritarian, it's a word I hadn't seen until your book, by the way, nutritarian, nutrient-dense diet, can we expect to see a change? I mean, will we feel a change? Will we see a change after a period of time?
Well, so many people have report that they think more clearly, the fog, and the cravings to overeat goes away. I mean, that's the thing. When you flood the body with nutrients, you're not craving calories. You're losing those addictions and desire to overeat. So people lose weight. They have more energy. They sleep better at night. Their sexual difficulties improve. You know, men's impotence problems go away. But their ability to perform at work and to concentrate, people do better in school and do better at work. And they're happier because they're not, you know, because depression is a major cause of eating poorly. It affects your brain, and even when you're not totally depressed, you're still mild forms of emotional, you know, it affects you negative emotions even though you're not totally in a major depression. So people are much happier and you feel good about yourself, and now you can radiate, you can be a role model, and you can have a better effect on other people, and you can be happier, and you can live longer and maintain your mental faculties as you age and better quality of life. So the rewards are tremendous, including the financial rewards, how the medical expenses are destroying our economy and destroying people's individual wealth, because everything they earn in life goes to pay for medical care as they get older.
I'm sure there are many listeners, Dr. Furman, right now are saying, well, this all makes sense, but look, I'm in my late 40s, I'm in my 50s, I'm in my 60s. Is it ever too late to shift over to the diet you're recommending?
Well, that's the whole point. That's one of the main points, is that, you know, heart disease is reversible. Strokes are preventable. The number one cause of death in America is still heart attacks and strokes. And almost any age, that can be prevented. You know, we can. So the point I'm making is that if you're alive, and a person listening to this broadcast is probably still alive, they can make changes to better the quality of their life and improve their health and reduce their body pain, their inflammation, their propensity for heart attacks and strokes, and their propensity for dementia. As long as they're still living, they could get in. They can improve their health. Of course, there's irreversible damage that can occur. Once you're demented and your brain shrinks, you can't grow back a new brain. So we do want people to start protecting their brain while they still have their full mental faculties intact. But even if you're starting to have memory loss and starting to get brain shrinkage, you're starting to be a little demented, like many Americans are because they're eating poorly, you want to stop the progression. You want to stop, you know, we can improve it a little bit, but we can't totally bring it back to normal if it gets too bad. The point is, now's the time to quit smoking. Now's the time to start eating right. Now, don't delay. Now's the time to get off your junk food habit. Do it now before problems get worse.
Just a quick note to listeners about our guest, Dr. Joel Furman, M.D., is a board-certified family physician and nutritional researcher who specializes in preventing and reversing disease through nutritional and natural methods. Dr. Furman, do you have a website with more info or more information about your latest book, Fast Food Genocide?
Yes, my website is drfurman.com. That's, of course, drfurman.com. And certainly I'm very, very excited about this book. And this book, the launch day is today. This is the day this book comes out. So this is really exciting.
Excellent. Dr. Joel Furman, again, the title of the book, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Just remember, Fast Food Genocide. You'll be able to find it. Thanks, Dr. Furman. Good to talk with you again. Thanks for being with us, sir.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Sure. So long now. Dr. Joel Furman. Still more to come on the It's Your Turn program today as we take a photographic trip through Jerusalem in Israel. We'll be talking with Elon Greenfield coming up next on the program. By the way, tomorrow, Ask the Lawyer. This is a program that we do periodically throughout the year in conjunction with the Butler County Bar Association. Ask the Lawyer tomorrow. It should be a good session because local attorney Michael Pater will be joining us. Mike Pater. And Attorney Pater deals a lot with elder law issues. So if you are a senior or if you are an adult child with aging parents, a lot of questions. And Attorney Michael Pater will be with us tomorrow, kicking off the program, 12:30, by the way, for Ask the Lawyer. And we look forward to that. That should be fun. We'll have more stuff for you as well, but we wanted to alert you that it's an Ask the Lawyer segment tomorrow. Okay, we'll take a break here, and then Jerusalem, Israel. It's up next on the It's Your Turn program this Wednesday. We'll be right back.
Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Butler County's only individually owned executive-level fitness and chiropractic center. You'll enjoy the clean, private, unintimidating atmosphere and appreciate the support of full-time professional staff there to assist you with your workout routine on Applewood's safe and modern equipment. Why not improve your general well-being at Applewood, just 3 miles from Butler on Thornapple Drive? Call 724-283-0518 or visit applewoodchiro.com.
Listeners, I've been very anxious to chat with our next guest. If you're joining us a little bit late here on the It's Your Turn program, my name is Dave Malarkey, and we're chatting for the next segment of our program with Elon Greenfield, who is the author of a new essay and a photograph book entitled My Jerusalem, the Eternal City. Elon, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you for hosting me, Dave. And as we say, good afternoon from Jerusalem.
Yes, we're long distance here. We really mean long distance, too.
Right. This long distance, 2,000 years, but only 7 hours away.
Yes, that's true. This is a significant year for Jerusalem, and I'm sure that that's why you chose this year to publish your book. Tell us about that. What anniversary are we marking this year, sir?
Actually, we're marking the 50th anniversary for the reunification of the city of Jerusalem during the 1967 war, which was called the Six-Day War. But I would say that was only the initial thought of why the book should come out. In my mind, and that's why we named it the Eternal City, Jerusalem has no time. Jerusalem is past, present, and future. So any celebration we want to add on to it is great, but we have to remember it's an eternal city. It's the eternal capital of the Jewish state. It's the eternal capital of Israel. And I would even say it's the eternal capital of the world and of world religions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll talk about that in just a moment or so. But tell us a little bit about the end of the Six-Day War and the reunification of Jerusalem 50 years ago. It was divided prior to this war, sir?
Okay, from 1948 is when the State of Israel was established. That was the independence of Israel was started. Mm-hmm. And then from 1948 until 1947, am I on?
Yes, you're still here. We just had a little blip there, that's
okay. I'm sorry. So from 1948 till 1967, the Jordanians had ruled the city of Jerusalem, the eastern part of the city of Jerusalem. The western part was under Israel government, and the eastern part was under Jordanian. During those years, those 19 years, Jews and, for the most part, Christians could not go and perform any religious actions on the Jordanian side. Synagogues were made stables, were desecrated, churches could not be walked into, and there was no freedom of religion. During the 1967 war, which is called the Six-Day War, the Israeli paratroopers were able to overtake and free the eastern part of Jerusalem and come into what's called the Old City of Jerusalem, where the Temple Mount is and where the Western Wall is, which is the remnant of the Jewish temple. And starting June 7th, 1967, and until today, and hopefully for many, many more years to come, there is freedom of religion, there's freedom of worship. Jews, Christians, Muslims from all over the world come to Jerusalem, pray, perform their religious action that they wanted, their religious ceremonies, and they are not being stopped by doing this. And this is maybe what triggered one of the items that triggered the book. We want to show how important it is that Jerusalem stay under Israeli sovereignty in order that all people from all over the world will be able to worship freely whichever way they want and however way they want in whatever is sacred to them.
Yes, and we should point out, many of our listeners will know this, but a little bit of a primer so that everyone is on the same page here. Jerusalem is a holy city, a sacred city to three of the world's great religions. Obviously, from the standpoint of the Jews, I believe it was King Solomon, is that right, that built the first temple on the Temple Mount? Do I have my kings correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Obviously, Christians will know that the crucifixion and death of Jesus Christ took place in Jerusalem. You may not know, listeners, that Jerusalem is also considered the place that is holy to Muslims because of the ascension of the Prophet Muhammad into heaven. That took place in Jerusalem.
Right, that took place in Jerusalem much later, in the year 600. If I may, I'd like to read a short passage from Pastor John Hagee, what he wrote about Jerusalem. It will maybe give us some proportion of history.
Good.
And he wrote there, he said, Jerusalem is where Abraham, the father of all who believe, placed his beloved son Isaac on the altar of sacrifice at Mount Moriah, reflecting his absolute faith in God Almighty. Jerusalem is a city King David conquered 3,000 years ago, making it the eternal city, the capital of Israel. Jerusalem is where Jeremiah and Isaiah penned the principles of righteousness that became the moral foundations of Western civilization. Jerusalem is where a rabbi named Jesus of Nazareth established the covenant of my faith that are chiseled in the depth of my soul. Jerusalem is where the Messiah will rule the earth for 1,000 years of perfect peace in the world to come. Jerusalem is the city that cradles my heart. And I think he put it so beautifully together because Jerusalem has past, present, and future. And it's to everybody, not only the Jews, not only the Christians, not only the Muslims. By the way, I believe that Jerusalem is also a very unique and important city for non-religious people. Many non-religious people who come to Israel, who walk the city of Jerusalem, I would say go through a certain transformation, because Jerusalem has some magic to it. And that magic transcends religion, politics, transcends everything. And in many of the articles and the personal stories that I include in the book, you see it from very different angles, from a personal angle, from a religious angle, from a political angle. And in my mind, that's the beauty of Jerusalem.
We're talking, for listeners who may have joined us a little bit late, on the It's Your Turn program today. And that happens, of course, especially with people listening to the radio in their car. We're talking with Elon Greenfield. He is the editor and a publisher of a book out this year entitled My Jerusalem, the Eternal City. And in just a moment or so, we'll talk a little bit about the structure of the book and some of the fantastic photographs in here. Your city, actually, in more ways than one, Elon, you were born in Israel, were you not?
I was born in Israel. I was born, actually, in Tel Aviv, but our publishing house is in Jerusalem, and I live just right by Jerusalem.
Yes. I see. Tell us a little bit about the structure of your book. It is a combination of essays and photographs. I know I'm truncating there, but basically that's what it is, correct?
Correct. What I try to bring out the human and the personal side aspect of Jerusalem. So on one hand, we took photographs of one of Israel's best photographers called Ziv Koren, who grasped the personal, I would say, aspect of what Jerusalem is. And then we also approached and asked many, many other people to write their own personal view of what they see Jerusalem is. And what we did not give them any guidelines. The only simple guideline was, write us what Jerusalem is for you, personal story. And when you read through the stories, it is incredible to read the different aspects of what they write, whether it's a reverend. I'll read one sentence from Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, who is a very important and influential Hispanic Christian. And he writes and he ends, he says, there are many things that are true about Jerusalem, but one thing that is true above them all, walking on these streets is walking into the presence of God. And I think, you know, every one of these stories almost says it all. And as we approach these people, and thank God the response was fabulous. Most people were, you know, they're busy people, they're important, they're influential. I'm sure they get 100 requests a day. Almost every one of them answered immediately and said, of course I will, give me just a bit of time and I'll write. And as the story started pouring in, my father is the founder of the company. He's just turned 91. And I sent him by email every story that came in. And every story he got, he called me back, whether it was 6 o'clock in the morning or midnight, and he said, Elon, this is amazing. Every story is better than the one before. This is unbelievable. And then we realized that these personal stories really create a taste of what Jerusalem is, a continuity of 2,000 years of history. And whether it's a man or a woman, a Jew or a Christian, didn't make any difference. Politician, musician, an author, whoever they were. So from that point, it was really a very, I would say, rewarding process of writing the book.
Listeners, we have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Elon Greenfield about his book, My Jerusalem, the Eternal City. We have to take a quick break. We'll do that. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to pick up our conversation.
Midday lottery number for you today. Today's pick 2 is 4242. The pick 3, 466. The pick 4, 6711. The pick 5, 04090. The wild ball for each of those is 3. The treasure hunt is 2, 6, 9, 14, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 36-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 1.24 APR. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today or visit armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're just joining us, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey, and on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR today, we're chatting on this segment of the program with Elon Greenfield, chatting with him, by the way, in Jerusalem by telephone. He is the author and the publisher of a new book published on the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Israel following the Six-Day War. The book title is My Jerusalem, the Eternal City. By the way, I want to make sure, Elon, that our listeners are not turned off when I said it's a combination of essays and photographs. The essays are very short. They're all just one page, correct?
Correct. Most of them are one page. There are a few that are just over one page. Most, again, we had limited the people because we didn't want to write long stories. We wanted people to get to the pinpoint, to the core of what Jerusalem meant to them. Mm-hmm. And most of them cooperated very, very nicely. And you can go and look through the pages, almost feel, almost smell, almost sense the atmosphere of Jerusalem. And you can pick any story you want to read. And I think anybody who will read any one of the stories will gain a lot from it and will want to read just one more. And hopefully, by the time they read just one more, they'll get to the last page, and then they'll get on the plane and come to Jerusalem.
Well, one of the short essays is by Mike Huckabee, and most of our listeners will recognize that name as been a presidential candidate a couple of times, TV commentator Mike Huckabee. He entitled his essay, which is just four paragraphs. Again, it's very succinct. He entitled it Next Year in Jerusalem, and he talks about his first visit there back in 1973, and I agree. You feel like you're there when you read his essay. Tell us a little bit about the some of the others. You have, I'm just going to go down the list here of names that I recognize. Alan Dershowitz submitted an essay for you to include in this book.
Alan Dershowitz actually has written the introduction to the book. He was so enthused with the book that he said he would write the introduction, and he wrote a most beautiful introduction putting together some of the history, some of the political aspects, and the importance and the centrality of Jerusalem to the state of Israel and to the Jewish people and to other religions as well. If I can go back to Mike Huckabee, I'll quote one thing that he said there, which is very beautiful. He wrote, "Is Jerusalem complicated? Yes, it is. Is it challenging to navigate its streets or figure out the many conflicts that continue from the time of King David? Yes, it is. But it is a city that must remain undivided and continue to be a city of peace and accommodation. Yes, yes, it is." And I think it shows because, again, Jerusalem, while it's a city of many conflicts, Jerusalem is a city where peace will come from. And if we all learn how to live with one another, how to coexist with religions, with different people, I believe peace will come out of Jerusalem, but it has to stay under Israeli rule. It has to be the capital of Israel, because only when it's under the capital of Israel, then there's freedom of religion and freedom of worship for anybody, for Jews, for Muslims, for Christians, and many other different religions as well.
It's the capital of Israel. Does the parliament, the Knesset, meet there as well?
Yes, the parliament, the Knesset, meets in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Most of the government, most of the government offices are in Jerusalem, and yes, it is the capital of Israel, although the United States has yet to move its embassy to Jerusalem, and hopefully that will come very soon, too.
I have never been to Jerusalem. It's on my bucket list, hopefully someday in the not-too-distant future. What does a visitor see when they come to Jerusalem? Obviously, modern buildings, but mixed with some structures that date back thousands of years, I imagine, right?
That is true. Well, first, Dave, I extend a personal invitation to you to come to Jerusalem. I will personally host you, and I will take you around the streets, and I will show you what you can see in the book. And believe me, it's by far better than what is in the book. To get back to your question, when you walk in Jerusalem, on one hand, it's really an old city. You have these old stone buildings. You have the old city of Jerusalem itself. 2,000 years ago, you have these huge, humongous rocks that you can't even imagine how 2,000 years ago people cut them and people picked them up and put them one on top of the other and build the temple that way. And right adjacent to that, you have a modern city with everything. One of the stories in the book is by Ziv Aviram. He is the co-founder of a high-tech company called Mobileye. Mobileye was just sold recently to Intel for $15 billion. It is the highest price ever paid for a startup company from Israel. The Israeli Silicon Valley, so to speak, is in the Tel Aviv area. Ziv Aviram and his partner chose to start their startup in Jerusalem. They are both Jerusalemites, and they said, we can do it in Jerusalem. Everybody told them, you're making a mistake. You won't get employment. You won't get the right engineers. There's no chance. Sure enough, 10 years later, they sold the company for the highest price any Israeli high-tech company sold for. And I think what it shows is that Jerusalem has everything. Jerusalem has the old, it has the ancient, it has the modern, and it has the future. So Jerusalem is past, present, and future, and innovation.
Are there?
And I think that combination is so beautiful.
Are there archaeological digs and explorations going on in Jerusalem? I know some ancient cities, Rome, for example, that they've built on top of what used to be there. The Roman Forum, for example, is actually below street level in the city of Rome. Has that happened at all in Jerusalem,
right?
And are they doing archaeological research?
Absolutely. It does happen in Jerusalem, and for the past 200 years and continuing up to today, there are excavations going on all throughout Jerusalem in different places. They're finding more and more ancient homes, more and more religious aspects of life in Jerusalem. It's amazing. I was just on a tour just outside of Jerusalem about 2 weeks ago in a place that the last time I was in 5 years ago, and it was incredible what findings they found. They found full buildings. They found storage warehouses for food. They found water cisterns. It's amazing to go and see in a modern city how history unfolds. Mm. And when you see it in front of your eyes, you just have to believe it because this is what it was. And again, throughout the years, layers have been built upon layers, and therefore you don't see everything. Not everything is revealed to the eye. But when you come now and you go through the excavations, you can see a whole lot and you can understand and see the history right in front of your eyes.
One final question for you, and you touched on the Western Wall earlier in our conversation. We see this come up anytime there's an important world visitor who visits Jerusalem, they go to the Western Wall. I recall the Pope doing that. Can you tell us again?
That is correct.
What's the significance of the Western Wall in terms of its relationship to Jewish history?
Okay. In Jerusalem, there used to be the temple. It was destroyed twice. And the Western Wall is the last remnant of the outside walls of that temple. And when you look at that wall and you see the huge rocks that it's built of, it is really unbelievable that engineers of 2,000 years ago were able to take those rocks and put one on top of the other. Now, there's no cement. It's one stone on top of the other. Stones weigh 1,000, 1,500, and 2,000 pounds. The wall has become a significant part because it's the last remnant of the temple. And Jews from all over the world, when they come, They take small notes and they put their prayers and their requests from God. And they put it in between the walls, between the stones. And for hundreds of years now, Jews have been coming. I would even say many non-Jews come to the wall and put their requests as well. Because as we know, God is one. We may call it one name, you may call it one name, some other one may call it a different name, but God is one, and most people who are believers believe that there is that one God, and many non-Jews as well come and put their notes and their request in there, and it's become a very emotional standing point for many people. When you come and see that huge wall in front of you, it gives you a dimension of history, gives you a dimension of how little we are as human being and how modest we should be next to this big, I would say, monument of faith, of religion. And again, regardless if you're religious or not, when you come to that wall, when you come to Jerusalem, something happens to you. I mean, it happens to different people in different ways, but there are very few people who don't get excited.